You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
We've got our ready to learn, haven't we?
We sure do. So I actually spoke to this person last week, and it was Dr. Gavin Northey, who's from the Department of Marketing at the University of Auckland Business School. And it was quite an interesting topic. The researchers looked into how the colour of food that you eat, or even the colour of packaging and marketing associated with food you eat, can affect how you perceive the texture of this food.
Which actually does make sense if you really think about it.
Yeah, it's weird but interesting. But yeah, let him speak on.
Let's do it.
Well, I mean, essentially what we found was that, usually when people are consuming food, there's three different things that actually contribute to the flavour perception. So it's the taste generally, let's assume that's on your tongue, the smell that you're actually getting, and then the feel of the food inside your mouth, so the texture of it, I guess. And previous research had looked at the fact that colour actually influences the taste. I mean, there's a lot of research about that. Some research about whether or not the colour influences the smell. But what we found was that there was no real research on colour and its influence on the perceived texture of the food that you're consuming.
So are you saying that it was already accepted that colour changes your perception of the taste and the smell?
It is, yeah, that's right, when you're consuming it. So together with some researchers from the University of New South Wales over in Australia, the first part of the study, we had a fairly large sample of people come into lab sessions, and we changed the food, the colour of the actual food products that they were eating, which were more or less sort of like custards and yogurt type foods. And we were measuring the perceived creaminess and crunchiness of the foods. And what we found when people actually consume the foods was that the colour influences the perceived texture. So we put that aside, and we've published that paper. But the second part of the research that we recently completed was that we now have found that if we just show people the ads, the colour that's in the ad, whether it sort of has a red or blue filter over the advertisement, it will also influence the expectations of the creaminess or crunchiness.
That's so interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, historically, over the last 100 years, what we've found out about human perception is typically they call this sort of thing cross-modal perception. So you're receiving information or a stimulus in one sensory modality. Colour, for example, is only in through your vision, and it has a cross-modal effect on one of the other sensory modalities. In this case, it would be your sense of touch, which is the cutaneous perception that you're getting when you put something in your mouth.
I wanted to ask, how do these results fit in with what we understand about synesthesia?
Right, so initially, neurologists and experimental psychologists thought that that this kind of perception or this kind of experience was really solely encountered by people with synesthesia, and that was originally thought to be around 1 in 25,000 people. Nowadays, we're down to probably more like about 1 in 20 people are expected to have some sort of synesthetic experience. But beyond that, we've actually found now over the last 10 or 15 years, neuroscience has found that different parts of the brain actually take sensory inputs from the different sensory modality sort of equipment, if you will, and they'll relay it to different parts of the neural cortex. And so now, effectively, the whole population is really on what we would consider a cross-modal spectrum.
When I first read about this, I was initially a bit surprised to see that you're from a marketing background, but I mean, obviously it makes sense. But I was wondering, with a topic like this, is there a big opportunity for sort of cross-discipline collaboration? You know, how does, you'd mentioned before neurologists, what would they bring to your research?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, marketing generally, if you actually look at marketing as a discipline, I mean, it really calls on psychology. Nowadays, we're looking at things called neuromarketing, or a discipline, sort of sub-discipline called neuromarketing, which is our how we can determine people's behaviours based on the activations in different parts of the brain. And so, you know, there is a lot of exposure to other disciplines, and increasingly people from the marketing world are starting to call on marketers and neuroscientists, I guess, to try and find these, you know, the different sort of parts of the neural anatomy that are actually being activated and that relate to the behaviours that we see in the marketplace.
Moving back to the findings, the colour related to texture, are we talking big changes for people? Like, what are the practical applications for people that are marketing food products?
Sure. You know, the whole sort of cross-modal marketing area is really still in its infancy. But at the moment, what we would be thinking is that really from the product development phase, so before you actually even have a product, you want to start thinking about the colours and the sensory experiences that you expect the customer to have. And so that goes right from the product itself, depending on what you know, product category you're in, through to packaging. You might look at the point of sale displays that you have on hand, and then the communications that you're sending out across different media, and how they all influence you know, not just things that you would think are example, but in this situation, the cross-modal responses that have a fairly high level of automaticity. That's where you would sort of want to start looking at the whole suite of product offerings.
When I listen to that, it really just sounds like people that are marketing are going to be getting much better at it and being able to do it to a much sort of finer degree.
Maybe you'd want to think so, wouldn't you? And you know, as a marketing person, I'd want to think so. The tough thing is that you know, the human mind and the human anatomy are so incredibly complex that you know, will we ever really know exactly what's happening? We can isolate things in certain experimental conditions, but then, you know, when a person's out and they're actually viewing an ad, there may be a whole range of other things going on. There may also be, you know, if you're in a purchase situation in a shop and you're going to buy something off the shelf, it may be that there's a whole range of other extraneous variables that marketers can never quite control. And so it's understanding, at least we may not be able to control everything, we may not be able to isolate everything in totality, but what we can do is certainly find causal relationships between different things and sort of generalize them to the population so that we can have more effective product development and obviously more effective communications.
Would you say that this area, speaking from the point of view of a consumer, do you think this is an aspect of marketing that you can, you know, if you're actively aware of it, you can notice how it's affecting you? Or are we talking so subtle that it's gone past that?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. So, I mean, you know, when you're looking at cross-modal perception, for example, these are non-conscious effects. And I mean, I mentioned the automaticity. these are things that occur and that will create an effect in your own perception that you may not be conscious of, and you may not be able to inhibit in any way. A lot of people, and you know, my friends and relatives are the same. A lot of people look at this and say, "Oh, well, that's sort of some sort of unconscionable sort of action that you're trying to do, where you're doing it outside of people's conscious and awareness." That isn't necessarily the case, and particularly some of our research we've presented around the world at different conferences, and surprisingly different academics and marketers have come up to us and asked us how we could use these to in social policy, for example, or in social marketing situations like smoking cessation, different sorts of, maybe the promotion of organic foods over more processed materials, things
like
that.
Yeah, but even if you are using these tactics for some areas that we consider to be sort of social good, they're still going to be used by big corporations and whatnot. They're still going to be used by Coca-Cola, right?
Maybe not. that's a tough one. I mean, look, your average corporation, their ultimate aim is to provide some sort of value, not just to the market, but also to their shareholders. So if they can find opportunities that will increase that ability, well, then certainly they'll capitalize on it. I mean, it's a valid concern. I mean, having said that, though, you look at the major international brands or the global brands. A lot of them now, because we're at a time in sort of society where the major brands have been around, particularly if you're looking at FMCG type products. They've been around for a long time. So for them to go and sort of radically change the brand collateral, that often isn't necessarily a viable option.
What do you mean by brand collateral, sorry?
Well, say, because you mentioned Coca-Cola. I mean, Coca-Cola has a really distinct brand, very distinct brand colours. The types of wording and the fonts that are used, for example. If all of a sudden we were to come in and say, "Oh, well, we think you should change the colour of the Coca-Cola can," that probably, well, no, it's not even a probable. That just wouldn't.
So you're not going to come in and say, "Make it blue so people think it's crunchy."
Exactly, exactly.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.